You know, Brian and I were just talking about how many years this has been going on, and we need to figure it out, but it's been well over 20 years. So how many people have been coming here for at least 10 or 12 years out of curiosity? 10, 12?
Yeah.
All right. A couple of us. You know, this is a really neat ministry. The purpose of this ministry is to really encourage CEOs to utilize their faith for Jesus Christ. And we try to bring speakers in that are relevant to business folks and give you some real meat and nuggets that you can take home and incorporate in your workplace. And today's going to be another special day. You know, our speaker happens to be our founder and the pastor of Johnson's Ferry Church. And we have, I've heard Brian speak on Nehemiah before, and this is one of my favorite books. I think Andy Stanley's got a book called Visioneering that's based on this passage right here. But if you're going to build something great, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. And if you look at Johnson's Ferry and the history, it started out as 50 people and it's grown to almost 10,000. And a lot of people look at the church like it's always been there, but it's been a growing entity, and it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of great people to get involved. And you got to create a great culture. And there's so many good things, like from the Good to Great book that Brian's talked about that the church embodies. You know, the principles that Nehemiah talks about will help you build something great too. So let's welcome our senior pastor and the founder of this ministry, Mr. Brian Wright.
You know, it's great when your members kind of exaggerate what is happening. We're not quite the 10,000 members, but it sounds good. It sounds good. I want you to know. That's right. Trey rounded off a big number there. Sure glad to be with you today to talk about this topic. I love this book, Nehemiah, because there's so much about leadership in it, but I want to talk to you today about these leadership principles for building something great. And it's always tough for us preachers when we repeat a topic that we've done before. I brought this message to the CEO luncheon about 5.5 years ago, and so I'll just say what my father always drilled into me. Repetition is more lasting than impact. It's one of his power-packed phrases. So you may have heard this 5.5 years ago, but probably most of you haven't because I saw all the hands that went up. They're here for the first time, and I doubt you were here to hear that. But if you did, hopefully it'll begin to sink in after today. Now, thinking about leadership and building something great, some of my favorite examples I want to share with you. First of all, Irk Russell, what he did at Georgia Southern. Some of you love him because he's kind of the ultimate dog, butting heads with the Georgia players on the sidelines with no helmet and drawing blood on his forehead, and he looks so tough and goes to Georgia Southern. What he did was phenomenal. Go there in 82, win a national championship within a few years, and not just one, but several. I mean, it's just a phenomenal achievement. Then if you're thinking about local business guys, there's Arthur Blank and Bernie Marcus and what they did with Home Depot. And I want to read this to you because it's interesting. 1978, they founded Home Depot. Its value now is about $219 billion. There's some guys walking the aisles in customer service at Home Depot stores that are multimillionaires because they began to invest early on with Home Depot stock. Well, you're talking about building something great, that is phenomenal. And then the more well-known ones, Apple. Apple is now the largest valued company in the world, $926 million. Obviously, I don't have the exact value as of yesterday, but that was founded in 76. Steve Jobs had the vision. He struggled as the CEO, wound up coming back. He had gotten a few things together. But think about this. The iPhone was introduced in 2007, folks. 2007. Now, think about that. A phone that's not just a phone, but it's a calendar, it's a computer, it's a camera, it's a GPS instrument. I mean, you just think of all the things you can do. It's, you know, my wife constantly, I don't use a computer, and I know some of you instantly have lost respect when you hear that. Good night, doesn't use a computer. I don't. But she reminds me that in my iPhone, there's more computer capacity than the Apollo astronauts have when they went to the moon. So there's a lot there for all of us in that dimension, but almost $1 trillion in value. And then Amazon. Amazon began in 1994. It's a real new company. Its market value is the second largest in the world, about $775 billion. It'll probably surpass Apple with the diversity that Amazon has. It'll probably catch it and go way beyond it over time. But what Bezos has done at Amazon is just phenomenal. And having a great idea and building something great, you know, that company didn't make money for a long time, but the investors could tell that this thing was a winner. It was going to make it. And sure enough, to see what has happened there. And then from a ministry standpoint, one of my heroes is Bill Bright and his wife, Yvonne. They founded Campus Crusade in 1951 by starting a campus ministry at UCLA, where they live there in California, in Southern California. But now it is called CRU. Listen to this. They have over 25,000 full-time missionaries on college campuses all over America and in 191 nations around the world. Well, you're talking about starting small and building something great through God's guidance in their life. It is phenomenal what Bill Bright did along with the support of his wife. So you hear these stories, man, they're exciting. Well, I want us to look at some biblical principles today from Nehemiah, who did build something great because he practiced some key principles. So principle number one, and we'll read this from verse 1 of Nehemiah chapter 2, came about in the month of Nisan, sounds like a card, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, he was of Persia, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king, and now I had not been sad in his presence before. Now, here's the number one principle I want you to jot down. I hope you're writing some of these down, because trustworthy character is the starting point. There is nothing more demoralizing than when the leader does not have trustworthy character. And let's think about it just from a big picture standpoint of three presidents. Think about what the nation went through with Richard Nixon and Watergate. Think what the nation went through in spite of incredible economy under Bill Clinton, but a man having oral sex with one of his interns in the White House and the scandal of all of that and the demoralization within the nation. Think about the tremendous success that President Trump is having economically, tax cuts, judicial appointments, all these kind of things, but because there's no trustworthy character there, the nation is incredibly divided. And when we've seen this time and time again, president after president, when there is a serious character flaw, it is demoralizing to those who are struggling. Well, let me tell you about Nehemiah. He had trustworthy character. Why is that? He was the cupbearer to the king. Now, let me give you a quick background of what happened. Nehemiah is Jewish, and the Jewish people were taken into Babylon. That's modern-day Iraq, the land of Saddam Hussein, in the 6th century B.C. It was called the Babylonian captivity. Now, they were only in captivity in Babylon for about 70 years, but the Persians conquered the Babylonians. That's Iran or Iran today. And the Persians, man, they had much more sophisticated culture all through history. Americans don't realize what a sophisticated culture the Persian culture is. But they came along, they conquered Babylon, and Cyrus the Great was the great king of Persia, and he allowed Jews to return to their homeland to build the temple again. But a lot of Jews stayed. And one of those Jews who stayed was Nehemiah. Now, it's interesting, whether it's a Daniel, whether it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the character of these biblical characters to be trusted by pagan kings of Babylon and Persia is really an astounding thing. I mean, the last thing you want to think about is a foreigner being the cupbearer for the most powerful man in all the world. But it says he had incredible character. Why? Because the cupbearer had to taste the food and the wine right as it was being served to the king. So if somebody has tried to poison the king, it was the cupbearer that died. Some people didn't want that job. I mean, that's quite a commitment there. But basically, the cupbearer was doing what the Secret Service does for the president today in different form or fashion, protecting the king. So the number one thing you want to learn about Nehemiah is his trustworthy character. If anybody's going to be trusted by the king, it's the cupbearer who's keeping him alive. And if there's any character trait that is the starting point for all of us when it comes to building something great is there must be, there needs to be, trustworthy character. Because otherwise, without trustworthy character, no matter how gifted and talented you may be, it tends to be a house of cards that comes tumbling down at some point because things have so built up in the frustration of those that you're leading that it just tends to fall apart. With Nehemiah, it was not that way. All right, the second character trait, an idea that won't go away. Let me read to you how he responds here. He says in verse 2 of chapter 2, "The king said to me, 'Why is your face so sad, though you're not sick? There's nothing but sadness of heart.' Then I was very much afraid, and I said to the king, 'Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate, and its gates have been consumed by fire?'" Now, a lot of the Jews went back when Cyrus the Great of Persia allowed them to go back and to build the temple. But the city was still in shambles. And the wall was destruction in ancient cities. I know there's a lot of talk about walls today, and that's an interesting political story, but we're not going to go there today. That's not the point of this message. But in ancient cultures, the wall around the city was absolutely essential because they were totally vulnerable to the enemies that would come if they didn't have a great wall around the city. One of the things that's fascinating to go to ancient cities today is to see the walls around. Go to Jerusalem today. That's the new wall in Jerusalem. It wasn't the one that Nehemiah built. It was built actually by Muslim leaders that you see in Jerusalem today. But it's the new wall because it's only about 500 or 600 years old. But what you see here is that Nehemiah had a burden about a clear mission. He had an idea on his heart that wouldn't go away, and that was he felt like somebody needed to rebuild this wall around Jerusalem, and he couldn't let it go. Well, now, think about some of the things we just talked about. Think about whether it is Apple and the iPhone, whether it is Amazon and what has occurred there. Think about those who have a great idea that it just gets in your craw and you just can't let it go. And it almost consumes you because you tend to think about it night and day. Well, Nehemiah was almost consumed. He was actually depressed. He was burdened. The king hadn't seen him like this. But he was burdened about that mission that God was putting on his heart. Now, third principle of leadership. He was willing to leave the familiar and step out on faith. Let me read to you what it says here. "Then the king said to me, 'What would you request?' He said, 'So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it.' Then the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, 'How long will your journey be, and when will you return?' So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time." Now, Nehemiah has a dangerous job. It's a dangerous job to be the cupbearer of the king, especially in that ancient world with all the intrigue and assassination attempts and things like that. But it's also a very prestigious job. And to be that close to the most powerful man in all the world, Artaxerxes, he was one of the successors to Cyrus the Great, to be that close to the king and all that power, to go to the unknown, to a city that's in shambles, that's desperately in need of a wall, and to realize that Nehemiah probably had never even been there. He's just hearing the stories. He probably was born in Babylon. Then Persia takes over Babylon, and he might not have ever even been there. So he's venturing out into the unknown. Now, those of you who've started a business, you understand this. Those of you who have left a great job to go take another job that was going to be involved in doing something that was new for a company that was already established, you understand this. I know that when I was in the business world a few years after finishing Carolina, It was a hard decision, and yet God was clearly leading me into ministry. But where it really caused me to have a big gulp, and this I know this will date me, I realize this, but when I handed in my route book, that included all of my customers in my territory. And I know a route book. I know some of you think this guy really did live in the ancient world. But we had a route book with the chemical company I was with. It just listed all the information with all the customers. And when I turned that over to my manager, and it had been providing some mighty good income, with this idea of leaving to go to seminary to go into ministry, that was a big goal. That was a big move into the unknown. When Ann and I left a very large church in Houston, Texas, where I was serving as a singles minister, to come to a church startup in North Atlanta where there was no building, no staff, just meeting in an empty doctor's office. I mean, that was a big gulp to leave the security of all that to come to a startup church where I would come in and we would have services in what would be the lobby of that doctor's office and had set up all the chairs on Saturday and doing those kind of things there are days. But I would come in on Monday morning, you're the only guy there. And I would often think, what am I supposed to do? I mean, it was that overwhelming, you know, just what do I do here? Because there was nobody in the hospital to go visit. It was just a few families getting together. I mean, that's kind of overwhelming. So what we see with Nehemiah is he was willing to step out and leave the familiar and step out on faith to do what God was leading him to do. And I think with all kinds of examples like we talked about today in business, you tend to see that. All right, principle number four, networking and past reliability increases your chances for success. This is something that he asked the king to do for him, and let's don't overlook this. Verse 7, I said to the king, if it please the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. And so a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, he may give me some timber to make beams for the gates and of the fortress which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I will go. And the king granted these to him. Now, this is something you can't overlook, folks, in thinking about, one, networking. In other words, every person you meet has potential to join with you in the vision that you have or the mission that you're a part of. Every person. They may not actually join with you, but they may connect you to somebody. And here we go all the way back to the ancient world, and Nehemiah recognized he needed some letters of endorsement. He needed to meet some people along the way that would help him achieve what he knew that he was supposed to accomplish in a very clear mission that he had. And there's also the fact that he showed the king how reliable he was. Because let's face it, as you think about this, as you're hiring people, what is the most important thing when you're hiring people? You're looking at trustworthy character, but you're also looking at track record. Track record. Is there anything in this person's past that indicates to me that they have a possibility of being a success in the enterprise that I'm calling them to be in? What's the track record? And if there's little track record, then you need all the networking possibly you can do in order to open the doors as Nehemiah was seeking to have happen for him. So it was very smart of him to ask the king to make these recommendations along the way. All right, principle number five, conduct a careful survey of the situation. Now, I want you to listen to what this says about what Nehemiah did once he came to Jerusalem. He said, I came to Jerusalem, I was there 3 days, and I arose. Listen to this, are y'all listening? Y'all listening? If you come to Johnson Ferry, you've heard that before, but really, you do need to listen to this. And I arose in the night, he said, and I had a few men with me. I didn't tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me except the animal in which I was riding. So I went out at night by the valley gate. He talks about all these gates. You go to Israel today, you still see some of these gates that are actually named in the book of Nehemiah. And he says in verse 16, the word says, the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I as yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who would do the work. Now, Nehemiah recognizes he's got to understand the challenge he's about to undertake. He is really surveying the city at night when nobody's around before he even publicizes why he has been led to Jerusalem, because he's trying to get a good read on the situation. He wants to do a careful study of what is going to be involved and the price that is going to need to be paid and the challenges that are out there before him. Now, in this regard, here's something I think all of you have seen as you think about starting a business or starting some organization. There are realistic visionaries and there are dreamers. Realistic visionaries have a good understanding of the challenge they're going to face, but they also are able to envision what can occur. Dreamers, and we've all seen dreamers, they have good ideas. They have exciting ideas, but they never implement those ideas. They're just dreamers. You can have some dreamers under you on your staff. They'll wear you out with all these wonderful thoughts and ideas, but never a careful study of how to implement and carry out the vision. That's a very different thing, being able to see the reality of the situation and the obstacles that are going to be there. So Nehemiah is showing tremendous wisdom in doing that. All right, principle number 6, be clear with the people on what the mission is. Now, Nehemiah has studied the situation, verse 17 of chapter 2. Then I said to the people, you see the bad situation we're in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. And then they said, let us arise and let us build. So they put their hands to the good work. Now, every leader that is going to implement a vision not only has to do a careful study of the obstacles and challenges and the realities of what they're going to face, but they've got to begin to communicate that vision with those people that they're going to be leading. Nehemiah had done a careful study, and then he begins to communicate that vision. Now, that's something that is vitally important. What is the mission of your enterprise? What's the mission? And does anybody besides you know it? You know, most guys that run a business, women that run a business, they know what the mission is, but do the people know? Does everybody know? Is it in the DNA of the organization that you run? You can't talk about it too much. At Johnson Ferry, we've got a very clear mission. We've got very clear core values that really flesh out what that mission is at Johnson Ferry. And there's tons of times, as I'm reiterating this, as I'm preaching the 1,000th message on the mission of Johnson Ferry or the core values of Johnson Ferry, I'm thinking, they're going to think this is so boring. I've heard this before. But the fact is, we can't say it enough. We have to reiterate over and over. If the leader is not reiterating it over and over again to where the people catch the vision, I'll guarantee you, it's not going to be a part of the DNA of the business or the enterprise that you lead. It's got to be out there before the people over and over again. So Nehemiah evidently recognized that. He very clearly communicated what that was. All right, another thing to keep in mind, expect opposition, but trust God for success. Let me read to you what happened. In verse 19, it says, but then Sabalat the Horonite. Anybody know what a Horonite is? I don't, so let me know if you find out. Tobiah the Ammonite. Now, the Ammonites are from what's modern-day Jordan. And then Geshem the Arab heard it, and they mocked us, and they despised us. And they said, what is this thing you're doing? A lot of people think that Arabs and Jews, you know, began to not get along in 1948 when Israel was reformed. Hey, this is going back hundreds of years before Jesus. And you see Arab-Jewish tension there. And so look at what it says. It says, so I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we as servants will arise and build, but you will have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem. Now, understand this in building something great. You're going to face opposition. There's always going to be skeptics. There's always going to be doubters and sometimes downright enemies opposed to what you're doing. And sometimes they're going to be very powerful enemies. You know, I've chuckled about the folks in Paulding County that want to start a second airport for Atlanta. It'd be wonderful. You know, Houston's got a second airport. LA's got a second airport. Dallas has got a second airport. New York's got three or four airports. But Delta Airlines is not for it. Now, think about those poor boys up there in Paulding County trying to pull that off. That's some pretty strong opposition. That's tough. That's going to be a tough hill to climb. Nehemiah faced opposition from some pretty strong enemies. And if you read the book of Nehemiah, you go to chapter 4, you go to chapter 6, you see that the opposition intensifies. So if you've got a big idea, if you've got a big vision, if you've got great, something really burdening your heart of what you feel you need to do, you're going to face opposition. Expect it. But if you are in the will of God, if you are a follower of the Lord, recognize that your strength in God is far greater than any opposition you're going to face. Far greater. Now, this is assuming that what you're doing is in the will of God. I can't answer that question for you. Has God led you to do what you're doing now? Or is it just what you feel is a good idea for your life? I can't answer that question. But if you are led by God to take on a big challenge, to build something great, then you've got the power of Almighty God with you, who has instilled within you this idea, this sense of calling, this sense of vision. And no earthly power is going to be able to stand up to the power of God. That was greatly reassuring to Nehemiah, and he clearly believed that by what he communicated to his enemies. And he basically told them, you guys are going to miss out. When we have great success here, you're going to miss out because you're on the wrong side, because he kept his focus on God. All right, principle number 8. Get the right people on the bus in the right seats. Now, we don't have time to read Nehemiah chapter 3, but what you'll see in chapter 3 of Nehemiah is he appoints person after person with the right gifts and the right tools to be in the right seat on the bus. Now, obviously, that's a good to great Jim Collins analogy. If you don't read any business books, read Collins' Built to Last, read Jim Collins' Good to Great. Two of the greatest business books you will ever read in understanding leadership and vision. And one of the great things about Collins' book is talking about getting the right people on the bus in the right seats. Now, let me share about that. We've got a couple examples at Johnson Ferry. We're blessed at Johnson Ferry with a long-tenured ministerial staff, especially our executive staff, really blessed. Two of our longest-tenured ministers are in different roles from where we call them to the church. Our pastoral care minister, been with us over 30 years, he was first called to be a singles minister. It didn't work out real good. He's a great guy. He's an incredible pastoral care minister. Our missions pastor, what has happened in global missions at Johnson Ferry is the most exciting God thing that the Lord has done in the last 25 years. But he used to be our student pastor. He was a good student pastor. But he is a phenomenal missions pastor. I mean, just off the charts. Now, here's why I share that with you. You may have some wrong people in the wrong spots. Sometimes, though, rather than just firing that person, and I realize any successful leader is going to have to terminate people. I mean, all of us have to. Imagine what it's like as a pastor when we have to terminate a minister. I mean, you think it's hard for you to terminate somebody? We terminate a minister, they lose their church, their family lose their church. You're talking about a tough deal. I mean, that is a tough deal. It's agonizing to have to do that. Realize terminations have to occur for various reasons. But sometimes you've got a good employee that's just in the wrong seat on the bus. And part of leadership is trying to discern, does this person have some gifts that is already committed to the mission, and I've just got them in the wrong spot? I just need to put them in a place where they can thrive and use the gifts that God has entrusted them. And all through chapter 3 of Nehemiah, you see that he has placed the right people on the bus in the right seats. Now, here's another thing about hiring folks. Are y'all listening? Okay. All right. It's a lot easier to hire than to fire. And especially in our litigious culture. Oh, my goodness. Just think of what you guys go through in having to dismiss somebody today with all the legal ramifications of that. Oh, my goodness. It is a nightmare. But it's a lot easier to hire than to fire. So you want to have a system in place in looking for your employees that makes wise decisions up front. Think about this. Your best references are in-house. References as a whole that you get from the person that's applying are worthless. They're basically worthless. Don't pay attention to that. But what you can do is you can call their references and ask them to tell you somebody else that's worked with them. That's all right. Secondary reference can help you out. They'll give you the real scoop. But your best references, in the end, are in-house. What do we mean by that? Chick-fil-A does this very wisely. We never have a minister that comes on our staff that hasn't had at least 3 in-depth trips to Johnson Ferry with their spouse. With their spouse on 2 out of 3 of those. Because what happens is they're meeting other people on the staff. Our best references come from other ministers on the staff. When one of them maybe comes to me and said, Brian, baby. Well, they don't usually say baby like me, but they do say Brian. They say, Brian, I'm just not sure that this couple is a fit with the team that we have here. That is the best reference I could ever have. So often we overlook the fact that the best references are in-house. Does this person fit your company? Does it fit your enterprise? Do they fit your enterprise? Are they going to have a spirit and character that you need? Is it? They may be very talented. They may have had great success elsewhere, but are they a fit on your particular team? So obviously the hiring decisions and getting the right people on the bus in the right seat, as Jim Collins talks about, that's vitally important. All right, principle number 9. Set the example by making personal sacrifices as the CEO. Now, I'll try to be a nice guy and not name 2 of these examples, but I think most of y'all know who we're talking about. Major company in Atlanta, CEO comes in, follow the founders, he's big stuff, comes from big company. He just about ran that thing in the ground. Took $210 million when he walked out the door. It was legal. You know, he's smart enough to look out for himself and have the agreement. You say, well, he just planned right. Yeah. But that ain't much example. Think about one of America's leading airlines going through a terrible time years ago. And so the CEO arranges to have the senior executives' pensions protected while the rest of the company was not protected. Now, you remember that? You know who we're talking about. Think of the morale that creates within the organization. That's not good. On the other hand, I love that, you know, Trey's going to love this. He's a big Clemson man, and I'm a Gamecock. This takes a big man to say this. But Dabo Swinney, he is outstanding, the Clemson coach, outstanding. And a few years ago, he wanted his assistants to be paid more, so he told whatever raise Clemson was going to give him, they gave it to the assistants, whatever's due him. You're talking about building morale, folks. That'll build some morale with your staff. Unselfish leadership like that. It's not the norm in the CEO culture in America today to have that unselfish sacrifice for the well-being of the organization and care for those that are under you. That's not the norm. And we see that this is a key leadership principle because Nehemiah was out there. I know we're running tight on time now, but Nehemiah in chapter 5 was out there. He could have taken allowances. He refused allowances he was entitled to just because he was out there on the front lines serving and making a difference with everybody else. Great example of leadership. All right, principle number 10. Perseverance equals success. And then when it occurs, give God the glory. Now I want to read to you real quickly here out of Nehemiah chapter 6. In verses 3 and 4, these guys that were opposed to Nehemiah came up. They wanted to have a secret meeting. Basically, they were going to assassinate him. They were the enemies of Israel and of his work. And they sent him a message. They said, come, let's meet together. They were planning to harm me, said Nehemiah. So verse 3, so I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down to your meeting. Why should the work stop while I leave it? And they did this 4 times in this manner. And I responded the same way. Well, Nehemiah, obviously he was suspicious of them, but he also was so focused on the mission and kept persevering in the mission that he was not going to let enemies, he was not going to let other things distract him along the way. He was staying focused on what he was supposed to be doing. And look at what happened. Here's the result. Verse 15. So the wall was completed on the 25th of the month of Elul in 52 days. 52 days. Now, if you would look at a modern parallel, think about how long we're going to be dealing with trouble there at 285 and 400 as they're going to get all that worked on. You know, it'll be years. Doing the wall around Jerusalem in 52 days would kind of like be building the outer loop, that dream of Atlanta citizens that never seems to come about and never will come about. But say someday a Nehemiah comes along and mobilizes the troops and we have an outer loop to help our traffic situation. It would be like building an outer loop in 2 months. I mean, that's really what Nehemiah did, because they didn't have all the tools. A lot of you guys in construction world, they didn't have all those tools back then. But man, did they get it done, and they get it done efficiently. So this is what the Word of God says after that. When all of our enemies heard of it and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence. I love that. For they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. So when we persevere in doing what God has called us to do, there's a greater chance for success if God has called us to do it and we're seeking to do it in a way that is pleasing to Him. But then, as we see in the book of Nehemiah, all the glory goes to God. Not to self, but ultimately Nehemiah was a man who recognized this was a calling of God. And when he was blessed with success, phenomenal success, he gave the glory to God. So when you see these principles, I hope you see it's just another reminder of how rich the Scriptures are, with all kinds of practical insight that you can apply to your everyday life, and especially if you're in a leadership role. Tremendous leadership principles that you can put into your everyday life. I love this saying of William Carey, great missionary, a couple of hundred years ago. He said this: ask great things of God and expect great things from God. Let me repeat it again. You might want to jot that down. Ask great things of God, expect great things from God. All right, now think about where you are in your life right now. Think about the leadership responsibility you have. What can you apply to your life, your company, your organization? What can you do as a better steward or manager of what God has entrusted to you with the vision and the mission that God has given you?